Thank you very much. I come to Slovakia often, and I can say some things in Slovak, which of course is similar to Polish, but I will defer displaying my knowledge of the Slovak language, so we do not confuse it with Polish. I want to thank Father Piotr Dikas and the Dominican community, and especially the Thomas Institute here in Warsaw, for this opportunity to be here and to speak with you this evening. I have come to Poland several times, but only to the airport in Warsaw before, always to Lublin and to Krakow, but this is the first time that I am spending some snowy days or cold days here in Warsaw. On Monday, it was 17 degrees in London. This year, there are celebrations all over the world commemorating the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin and the 150th anniversary of the publication of his famous book on the origin of species. If we needed any further reminder of controversies, real and apparent, between religion and science in the modern world, we might also note that this year is the 400th anniversary of Galileo's initial astronomical observations. Surely the Galileo affair and the debate over evolution, both biological and cosmological, are key elements in a wider discussion about the relationship among the natural sciences, philosophy, and theology. I want to begin my remarks about this wider discourse by reminding you that in recent and not so recent discussions about evolution and the role of God in biological change, the choice for many seems to be between a purely natural explanation of the origin and development of life, an explanation in terms of common descent, genetic mutation, and natural selection as the mechanisms of biological change, on the one hand, and on the other hand, an explanation which sees divine agency as the source of life in all its diversity, and that human beings, created in the image and likeness of God, have a special place in the universe. The difference appears stark, either Darwin or God. This sense of a fundamental incompatibility between creation and evolution is enmeshed in a broader intellectual framework, which is captured in the title of my presentation. This wider context has its source in recent developments in the natural sciences, especially in cosmology and biology, which have led to wide-ranging speculations about implications for traditional theological and philosophical understandings of creation, that is, of the complete dependence of all that is on the unique creative act of God. Often these scientific developments have been used to support a kind of totalizing naturalism, according to which the universe and the processes within it need no explanation beyond the categories of the natural sciences. To some degree, such a conclusion corresponds to the philosophical claim that existence is a brute fact, which does not call for any explanation beyond itself. Thus, only the emergence of new things from already existing realities, or their going out of existence, or other varieties of change, need to be explained. What does not need to be explained, so this position contends, is the mere existence of that which changes. The argument is that the natural sciences are fully sufficient, at least in principle, to account for all that needs to be accounted for in the universe. Whether we speak of purported explanations of the Big Bang itself, such as quantum tunneling from nothing, or of some version of a multiverse hypothesis, or of self-organizing principles in biological change, including at times appeals to randomness and chance as ultimate explanations, the conclusion which seems inescapable to many is that there is no need to appeal to a creator, that is, to any cause which is outside the natural order. It is this topic, the self-sufficiency of nature, and its relation to the doctrine of creation, which will be the focus of my brief comments this evening. This is a point made with particular clarity by Jean-Michel Mallarmé in the first quotation, in French, on your handout. Note his emphasis on the widespread view that nature is self-sufficient, and that, accordingly, the traditional doctrine of creation has more or less disappeared, or has at least lost its currency. Heinrich Kairo, a German chemist writing a little more than a century ago, noted that, quote, science has conducted God to its frontiers, thanking him for his provisional services. Stephen Hawking, commenting upon the implications of his own view that the universe does not have a beginning, concluded that there is nothing for a creator to do. The universe just is. Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett, working from principles of evolutionary biology, reach a similar conclusion. Dawkins writes in what has become famous phrase that belief in God is a computer virus of the mind, and that the universe disclosed by evolutionary biology has precisely the properties we would expect if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. In some contemporary cosmological circles, there is a clear desire to get rid of the troubling singularity of the Big Bang, since, so conceived, the Big Bang has at times been identified with an original act of creation. The most famous example of the Big Bang used to support creation is the work of William Lane Craig. Craig and others argue that since science shows us that the universe began in a kind of primal event, the Big Bang, we are compelled to accept the existence of a creator as the cause of this event. But now, not only are there various theories to explain an initial Big Bang in exclusively scientific terms, cosmologists like Neil Turok of Cambridge University, using a development of superstring theory, offer a model in which the birth of the present universe is the result of a collision of enormous four-dimensional membranes. Turok's universe is, as he says, philosophically very appealing. Time is infinite, space is infinite, and they've always been here. It is exactly what the steady-state universe people wanted. Our model realizes their goal, that is, a universe without a cause beyond itself. As Turok notes, many cosmologists in the 1950s and early 1960s were reluctant to accept the Big Bang theory, because if the universe were thought to have such a beginning, then the initial conditions would have to be in some sense accidental, that is, not included within the explanatory domain of the natural sciences. The initial conditions thus would have to have a source beyond the explanatory domain of the natural sciences, a source which some thought must mean God. Cosmologists in the Soviet Union, well into the 1960s, were forbidden to teach Big Bang cosmology, since authorities deemed it to be theistic science. Turok's recent book, co-authored with Paul Steinhardt, has the revealing title, The Endless Universe. Since he and Steinhardt propose endless collisions and rebirths, one big bang after another after another. There is no need to appeal to a creator. We just happen to live in one universe among an infinite number. The multiverse needs no explanation beyond itself. The multiverse does not need a creator. In a book published last year, Stuart Kaufman, famous for his work on information systems and biocomplexity, argues that we are reinventing the sacred as a result of a new view of science. This is quotation number 3 on your handout. This new view of science involves a rejection of reductionism and an affirmation of the emergent properties of a dynamic universe of ceaseless creativity. As he observes, life has emerged in the universe without requiring special intervention from a creator God. All, I claim, arose without a creator God. Is not this view, a view based on an expanded science, God enough? Is not nature itself creativity enough? What more do we really need of God?
I think we could proceed because,
as I've suggested, the universe described by contemporary science is often viewed as a self-contained universe, exhaustively understood in terms of the principles and laws of science. In such a universe, there would seem to be little, if any, need for the God of Jewish, Muslim, or Christian revelation. The traditional doctrine of creation appears obsolete in the face of the recent advances of science. The role of a creator has, so it seems, been rendered superfluous. A creator represents, at best, an intellectual artifact from a less enlightened age. One source of confusion in such an analysis is to see God's creative act essentially as the explanation for order and design in nature, that is, to identify creation with the causing of order and design. As evolutionary biology, for example, claims to be able to explain order and design without an appeal to an orderer or designer, but exclusively on the basis of natural processes, it appears to many that there is no longer a role for God to play. Another confusion is to identify creation necessarily with a temporal beginning of the universe. So if we deny such a beginning, we seem to deny creation. If we restrict ourselves to biology, the extent to which biologists, when they speak about self-organization or autopoiesis, move beyond the domain of biology to make broad claims about self-creation, and that accordingly there is no need to appeal to a source of existence of living things, is the extent to which their claims are broadly metaphysical. An important feature of these philosophical claims, namely that self-creation and the self-creation and self-sufficiency evident in the natural world eliminates the need to appeal to God, involves conceptions of God and creation, which, even if shared by some believers, are really not the same as those found in traditional philosophy and theology. This evening I want to argue briefly, perhaps not as briefly as I expected, I want to argue briefly for the value of a return to the Middle Ages, and particularly to Thomas Aquinas, to evaluate contemporary claims about a self-sufficient universe. Medieval discussions about creation, especially the intelligibility of creatio ex nihilo, of divine agency, the autonomy of nature, and ultimately the very possibility of the natural sciences discovering real causes in nature, provide a rich source of insights for us today. For what Avicenna, Maimonides, and Thomas Aquinas, for example, saw so clearly, that creation is an account of the existence of things, not of changes in and among things, allows us to conclude that there is no contradiction between creation, so understood, and any conclusion in the natural sciences. The key to Thomas Aquinas' analysis, for example, is the distinction he draws between creation and change, or as he often remarked, creatio non est mutatio, creation is not a change. Creation as a metaphysical and theological notion affirms that all that is, in whatever way or ways it is, depends upon God as cause. The natural sciences, whether Aristotelian, with which Thomas was primarily concerned, or those of our own day, the natural sciences have as their subject the world of changing things, from subatomic particles to acorns to galaxies. Whenever there is a change, there must be something which changes. Whether these changes are biological or cosmological, without beginning or end, or temporally finite, they remain processes. Creation, on the other hand, is the radical causing of the whole existence of whatever exists. To cause completely something to exist is not to produce a change in something, is not to work on or with some existing material. If in producing something new, an agent were to use something already existing, the agent would not be the complete cause of the new thing. But such complete causing is precisely what creation is. To create is to cause existence, and all things are totally dependent upon the Creator for the very fact that they are. As Thomas remarks, quotation 5 on your handout, in his treatise on separated substances, over and above the mode of becoming by which something comes to be through change or motion, there must be a mode of becoming or origin of things without any mutation or motion through the influx of being. Evolutionary biology, cosmology, and all the other natural sciences offer accounts of change. They do not address the metaphysical and theological question of creation. The failure to recognize this distinction is the source of much of the contemporary confusion concerning the relationship between theology and science. For Thomas, creation is not primarily some distant event. Rather, it is the ongoing, complete causing of the existence of all that is. At this very moment, were God not causing all that is to exist, from subatomic particles to the color of the sky to our own thoughts, hopes, and dreams, were God not to be causing everything that is, there would be nothing at all. Creation for Thomas concerns, first of all, the origin of the universe, not its temporal beginning. Indeed, it is important to recognize his distinction between origin and beginning. The former, origin, affirms the complete, continuing dependence of all that is on God as cause. Although Thomas believed, as a matter of faith, that the universe had a temporal beginning, he thought that there was no contradiction in the notion of an eternal created universe. For were the universe to be without a beginning, it still would have an origin. It still would be created. Those contemporary cosmological theories which employ a multiverse hypothesis or an infinite series of Big Bangs would not, for Thomas, challenge the fundamental feature of what it means to be created. So no matter how many universes there might be, every one of them would be a created universe. The problem which those who defend a self-sufficiency in nature and its processes see is that any appeal to a cause outside of nature is either superfluous or contradictory to the very claim that nature is the domain of self-organizing activities. They often do so because they see God as a competing cause among other causes in nature. There is a confusion here, however, about different orders or levels of explanation. If we ask, for example, why wood is heated in the presence of fire, we can explain the phenomenon in terms of the characteristics of both wood and fire. Thomas Aquinas remarks that if a person answers the question of why the wood is heated by saying that God wills it, the person answers appropriately, provided he intends to take the question back to a first cause, but not appropriately if he means to exclude all other causes. Thomas was especially concerned with refuting the views of those who thought that to defend divine omnipotence and sovereignty, one had to deny any causes in nature. Thomas thinks that to defend the fact that creatures are real causes, far from challenging divine omnipotence, is a powerful argument for divine omnipotence. As he says, to deny the power of creatures to be the causes of things is to detract from the perfection of creatures and thus to detract from the perfection of divine power. Thus, a self-sufficient universe, that is, a universe explicable in terms of causes in nature, is precisely the universe God has created.
You are very bright.
For Thomas, God is at work in every operation of nature. Creatures are what they are and do what they do because God is present to them as cause. The autonomy of nature is not an indication of some reduction in God's power or activity. Rather, it is an indication of his goodness. It is important to recognize that for Thomas, divine causality and creaturely causality function at fundamentally different levels. It is true to say that God is the complete cause of what happens in the world, and that creatures are complete causes as well. It is not that God and creatures are each partial causes or even co-causes. The self-sufficiency of nature, the dynamism of natural processes which science discovers, does not mean that God is superfluous, since he is the cause of nature itself. He is a cause in such a way that nature has its own integrity, its own self-organizing principles.
Samowystarczalność natury, dynamizm procesów naturalnych, które odkrywa nauka, nie oznacza, że Bóg jest zbyteczny, gdyż On jest przyczyną samej natury. On jest przyczyną w taki sposób, że natura ma swoją własną integralność, swoje własne, samoorganizujące się zasady.
For Thomas, there is no conflict between the doctrine of creation and any physical theory. Theories in the natural sciences account for change, whether the changes described are cosmological or biological, unending or finite, they remain processes. Creation accounts for the existence of things, not for changes in things. Contemporary debates about cosmology, evolution, and creation often ignore the fundamental insight of Thomas that creation is not a change. God's creative power is exercised throughout the entire course of cosmic history in whatever ways that history has unfolded. No explanation of biological or cosmological change, no matter how radically random or contingent such an explanation claims to be, no explanation challenges the metaphysical account of creation, that is, the dependence of the existence of all things upon God as cause. When some thinkers deny creation on the basis of theories in the natural sciences, or reject conclusions of these sciences in defense of creation, these thinkers misunderstand creation or the natural sciences, or both. And one further caution: we need also to avoid making the mistake of thinking that Big Bang cosmology, in its traditional sense, offers any confirmation of creation. For conclusion, the complete dependence of all that is on God does not challenge an appropriate autonomy of natural causation. God is not a competing cause in a world of other causes. In fact, God's causality is such that he causes creatures to be the kind of causal agents which they are. In an important sense, there would be no autonomy to the natural order were God not causing it to be so. There would be no evolutionary and cosmological processes at all were God's not creating them to be and to be what they are. Traditional conceptions of God as creator certainly need not be abandoned in order to embrace an evolving universe in which real novelty and contingency are characteristic features of nature. The created universe is a self-sufficient universe in that there is a real autonomy and integrity to its processes, an autonomy and integrity caused to be such by the Creator. For Thomas, the natural sciences, philosophy, and theology discover complementary, not competing, truths about nature, human nature, and God. We need not choose between a universe which is created and a universe with autonomous natural causes. We do need, however, to be careful to keep distinct explanations in the natural sciences, in metaphysics, and in theology. Thomas Aquinas did not have the advantage of the Hubble Space Telescope or of the new Large Hadron Collider, but he's able to see more farther and more clearly than those who do. Thank you very much.